Okay, the next section of our notes are the page that starts with the word lungs, and we'll take some general bullets about that. They take up most of the thoracic cavity, except the mediastinum. So, if you remember, the mediastinum was like a bag of goodies, I called it, in the middle of the chest. It was a bag that contained the heart, the great vessels, the esophagus, trachea, and then basically everything else in your chest cavity is lung tissue. And it's got that same system. If you remember from with the heart, you had the pericardium, that bag around it, and it had that double lining, the lining on the heart itself and the lining on the wall around it, and then fluid in between to reduce friction. Well, the lungs have a very similar thing. The left, second bullet, the left lung has two lobes and the right lung has three. If you look at page 823 from the book, you'll see that. And as you can imagine, because the heart is largely on the left side, it has two lobes because it's got less tissue in total than the right side does. So those layers I was talking about, the third bullet says lungs are covered with a visceral pleura and the walls of the cavity are lined with parietal pleura. So you've got the two and a very thin layer of a slippery fluid in between. And actually, that's the fourth bullet. There's a fluid between the two. And then the next bullet says intrapleural pressure is always negative. And what that means is, like, you can imagine that the chest cavity is a rigid structure. You got ribs in there and such, and muscles between those ribs. And that dome comes up to the top. And then at the bottom, there's the diaphragm, which is a thick piece of muscle that seals across the bottom of all the ribs. And as the diaphragm goes up and down, it causes low pressure and causes you to inhale. We're going to get to that later. But the lungs would love to shrink to a smaller size than they are. And the thing that keeps them from shrinking is a really weird force. Now, we've done microscope labs where when you put down slides on the desk, and if there's water on it, you try to pick the slide up, you can't break it loose from the desk. It's a weird force. It's just the nature of water between two layers like this. And if you want to pick up that slide, you have to slide it to the edge of the lab's table and then lift it up there. We have a similar kind of force inside your lungs. When the slide is sitting on the table, you can move it around easily. So you can't say that it's glued to the table. It's a different thing. The same thing with your lungs. They move next to the ribs that they are, in proximity to, but they are not glued to it in any way, other than this mysterious water force. So when the chest cavity expands, when the chest, the rib cage moves up and out, and the floor of the diaphragm drops down, and you create this bigger space, the lungs don't have a choice. They have to go with it. So they expand. If that intrapleural pressure is equal, or certainly if it was positive, but even if it's the same, the lungs will collapse inside the chest cavity, meaning, like, if you have like a stab wound through your ribs and now you have air access moving from the outside in, you'll get that sucking chest wound kind of thing, and the lung will collapse. So it just shrinks. And then even if you try to inhale, there's no force that causes air to move into your lungs anymore. It's going to be a pretty horrible feeling. The next bullet says when air gets into the intrapleural space, it's called a pneumothorax. And that literally means, like air in the lungs. There's a condition you can get just like, I think I told you I had pericarditis a few years back, which was inflammation in the pericardium, extra fluid in there made that weird sound. We listened to it during that one lab. There's another thing you can get in a similar location but around the lungs called pleurisy. This is your next bullet. Pleurisy is inflammation of the pleura, probably from a decreased secretion of fluid, and it makes for painful breathing. If you get pleurisy, I've had a few swimmers get it over the years. When they breathe in, there's little pings of pain all across the chest cavity, just little sharp stabs of pain, and it lasts for a few days and goes away. It's usually after an infection, after a bad lung infection. And the last bullet about the lungs, they weigh about 2.5 pounds. All right, conducting zone. These are the first bullet there, the passages that bring air to and from the respiratory. And a small list of them are the trachea, Number two, the main bronchi and the bronchioles. And the last bullet under that little thing to mention is that there's no gas exchange taking place here. It's just bringing the air in. Respiratory zone, first bullet, it is the location of gas exchange. So that's where you're in, and it's an exchange. You have oxygen going in and carbon dioxide coming out. Respiratory zone is made of the four bullets below: respiratory bronchioles, alveolar ducts, alveolar sacs, and then the star of the show, the alveoli themselves. At this time, I would like you to see for all those parts I just listed, go to page 825 of the book and try to find all four of those words in this drawing. On the next page of notes, it starts with bullets about the alveoli, and I want the book open to page 828. Back in the good old days when we had lab practicals and all that, this was one of our practical pictures. This is an important drawing showing the construction of the alveoli, and again, you have millions of these in your lung tissue. First bullet, the walls are made of a single layer of squamous epithelium. So the fried eggs, you know, they have curvature to them, but you can see those are the purple cells in the drawing, but they are a single layer thick. Next bullet, the internal surface, that's the one away from the air, the internal surface is covered with a web of capillaries. If you look at the drawing on the top right of that page, those little red bands that are all around those balls, those are the capillaries completely covering them. Third bullet, the surface of the lungs are equal to the classroom of this size classroom of floor space, and we already talked about that during the first part. But if you were to take all the lung tissue and lay it out flat, it would be bigger than the floor of our classroom. Fourth bullet, gas exchange occurs by simple diffusion. So when oxygen moves into the bladder, CO2 moves out, the only force making it happen is going from high concentration towards low. It's a simple thing. You don't need to spend energy to get it in or out. There's a really cool kind of cell. If you look closely at the drawing, alveolar macrophages. Now, you know what macrophages are. These will be white blood cells, and they are in your lung tissue just crawling around looking for anything that made it past all the other protections that we have. So the bullet says alveolar macrophages patrol for bacteria and debris. If you think about it, those really are on the surface of your body because they're outside of your body. It would be no different than if they were walking on your skin. It just happens to be in the mucosa part, or you know, in deep in your lungs, but it's still on you, not in you. It's kind of cool. The last bullet, there's another kind of cell. If you look at the picture carefully, there's these cuboidal surfactant secreting cells, which put out a fluid to keep the cells moist. And it's one of the problems with premature babies is that these cells aren't online yet, and their lungs have a hard time because they're early. They weren't supposed to be out yet. Now we're going to talk about respiratory physiology. These are just some of the terms you would hear discussed in the process of drawing air in and out of your lungs. Pulmonary ventilation is just that's AKA breathing. It's a pretty simple bullet there. External respiration is oxygen moving from the air into the blood, and carbon dioxide moving from the blood to the air. So that takes place in your lung tissue. It's external respiration. Then we've taken in this nice oxygen. Well, we need to deliver it to our toes. So we're going to have to move it through respiratory gas transport. So I want you to write for that one, moves newly acquired oxygen from the capillaries of the lungs to the capillaries of the tissues. And then internal respiration is going to be gas exchange between the blood and the tissues, the body cells. Now, because we can't just open our mouth and wait for air to move in and out, we have to move the air in and out. So it's a simple physics thing that we create to make the air move in and out. Most of you took, well, actually, all of you took chemistry and you had to learn the gas laws. If you have a volume of air and then you just put it in a smaller place, that same volume of air, but now in a smaller place, the air molecules are closer to each other and the pressure goes up. And the other side of the coin is if you take a volume of air and expand it, then the pressure, the particles will be further apart, the pressure within that volume will be less. So What we do with our thoracic cavity is we change the size of it. And by changing the size of it, we change the pressure inside of it. So I've got a little flow chart here on the notes. You increase the volume. So when you breathe in, you raise your ribs up and out. You drop the floor of the thoracic cavity, so you have increased the volume. When you increase volume, as I was just talking about, you lower the pressure. So air moves in to compensate. So you just breathed in. Then you decrease volume. The dome of your diaphragm comes back up. The ribs settle back down. You increase pressure, and then the air moves out to balance out. On the next page of notes, talk about inspiration and expiration, bringing air in and pushing it back out. I'd like the book open to page 836 for this because breathing in requires energy be spent. We're going to have to contract muscles to draw air in. So first bullet, diaphragm and external intercostals contract. Those two muscles have to be fired to draw air in. Second bullet, diaphragm flattens, because remember it starts in a dome shape when it's relaxed. So diaphragm flattens, ribs are lifted, and sternum moves forward. So all of those things make that volume bigger. Now, the lungs don't have a choice. They have to go along for the ride because of the whole wet microscope slide thing. So, for a third bullet, lungs adhere to the walls so they expand with the cavity. Expiration is mostly a passive event if you're just relaxed and you're not ill or anything. It's a passive event. The muscles relaxing and lung elasticity itself, when the lungs stretch, the lungs have an elasticity that wants to bring them back to a smaller size. Second bullet, if blocked by asthma, mucus, or fluid, the internal intercostals contract to help expel air. And for a third bullet, abdominal muscles will also contract to force air out if needed. So it could be that if you're having a hard time breathing out, you have to fire muscles to help squirt the air out of you. And I can tell you as an asthmatic over these years, when you've got a day or two of this, your rib cage and your muscles of your stomach, they get sore from pushing the air out like that. Last little section, some non-respiratory air movements. This is just stuff that happens that has nothing to do with you trying to oxygenate your tissues. These are a bunch of single word bullets. First one, coughing. Second one, sneezing. Third one, I've seen people do this before. I've never done it myself. It's called crying. Fourth one is laughing. Next one is hiccups. And last one is yawning. So any of those things are on that list of non-respiratory air movements.